Jay from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
We sound so serious. It's like we're starting our newscast.
I know, And now, weekend update news with John Trumbull and Darren Patterson.
Yes. So, yeah, for the first time in a long time, SNL off for the week, for several weeks. We don't really know at this point when they're coming back. Darren was telling me before we started recording, he thinks it might be December, and I kind of agree with your logic on that.
Yeah, I mean, just because this past weekend, no new episode. This upcoming weekend, we haven't heard anything about a new episode.
Right.
And the weekend after that is Thanksgiving weekend, so you got to take that off. So, I mean, after that, we're in December. So, like, I honestly think we'll probably get some, you know, some December Christmas episodes, maybe, like, you know, maybe two, maybe three, and then that's it. So, like, yeah, I don't see it coming back till then.
Okay. Yeah. I can't argue with your logic there, sir.
It's my hot take.
That is the hottest of takes. That is a very hot take. Yeah.
And seeing as how, like, yeah, like, and I know we've also talked about this season being maybe the final season for a bunch of cast members. So, I don't know. Do you think, like, after, you know, this next month, that'll be some cast members will kind of take their final bow, or do you think they'll hold off until, you know, the spring where, like, the season finally come to the close? Because, like, at this point, we're at the midway point of the season.
We're not quite at the midway point. I mean, we're only six episodes in, so.
Are we not? I don't know how seasons work.
No. I mean, they do, like, you know, 20 or so episodes a season, so I wouldn't say we're at the midway point until we're in double digits, because math.
Wait, so six isn't half of 20?
It is not, but we will go over this later on.
Oh, wow, this is. I'm gonna have to do my taxes all over again. This is embarrassing. Oh boy, I'm going to jail, John. I'm going to jail.
But but there was a bit of SNL news sort of this week. It was announced that John Mulaney is going to be a writer on Late Night with Seth Meyers. That was kind of surprising.
Yeah, very much so. Because, I mean, Mulaney is, you know, a beloved stand-up. He's, you know, he did a Netflix special at Radio City Music Hall. Like, he's, you would think he's above, you know, writing for, you know, I don't want to say just Seth Meyers, but he'd be above being a staff writer for any show. And, like, I mean, my only thought for this is because of COVID-19 and, like, he doesn't know when he can tour like he used to. I honestly think he's just doing this until he can, you know, we have a vaccine and, like, things can go sort of back to normal. I think it's just
that was my thought too, is I don't see him doing this as a career move if we weren't in pandemic world and stand up wasn't as much of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, cuz that would definitely be like a step backwards. You know, no offense. I would still love to be a staff writer for any comedy show out there. Seth Meyers, please, you know, call me. But, I mean, for John Mulaney, it's a bit of a step back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he has had staff writing jobs before. He was a writer on SNL, and he obviously goes back with Seth. So I think it's really interesting. It's going to be neat to see what sort of material he turns out for them. I enjoy Seth Meyers' show to begin with, so I think this is only going to be a good thing for him.
And plus, now that Amber Ruffin has her own show on Peacock, I'm assuming, I mean, I haven't watched Seth Meyers, you know, lately that much. I don't know if Amber Ruffin is, like, you know, still popping up on his show and doing her show, or is she all in on just her show? So, but, I mean, she is all in on her show. Then, like, John Mulaney would be a good fit to sort of fill in that space that Amber Ruffin left behind.
I haven't seen her on the show lately. As far as I know, she has left. I mean, because doing your own show is kind of an all-consuming thing. So I would imagine, I can't see her doing both.
No. But it's not a side hustle. You can't do both.
I mean, I guess you could, but why would you if you got your own show? I mean, why wouldn't you put everything you have into that show? So,
fair enough. I'm learning a lot today so far. I'm learning about how math works, and I'm learning about jobs on talk shows.
Right, and it's just mad supposition for me on the talk show front, because I don't know. I'm a viewer like anybody else. All I know is just I haven't seen her on the show lately. So,
yeah. All right, fair enough. But, I look forward to any new episodes that John Mulaney will come up with. It'll be a good way to, have his comedy, like new fresh takes on things, until he can pump out a new special or something.
Yeah, that'll be cool. So since SNL is off this week for the first of who knows how many weeks, probably at least three, we decided, okay, let's do something we haven't done in a little while. We're going to do a theme show.
Theme shows. Remember those guys?
We did a lot of theme shows early on. We did like our favorite cast members, our favorite sketches, sports hosts. We did a thing on the Avengers host, cast members from the Avengers movies.
Favorite musical guest. We did that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Athlete host.
Yes.
Favorite characters.
Did we do favorite characters? I don't remember doing that.
We did. Yeah. Episode 21. I'm looking through it right now. So.
Oh, okay. Well, if it actually exists and is out there, okay. I should listen to that one and refresh my memory. I don't remember who my favorite characters are. I'm even fascinated by that episode.
I wonder what I said. I have no idea.
I know. Do you ever listen back to an episode like ages after we've recorded it and then you're just like surprised by it?
Yeah, pretty much. Basically, because I'm just babbling into this mic, I have no idea what I'm saying. And then I go back, and I'm like, oh, huh. Why'd I say that? Good Lord. I just black out when I'm on the mic. I have no idea what's happening.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, 100%. Me too. So we decided, since we just went through a very intense political season with hotly contested presidential election, why don't we do something we haven't done before and do our favorite political sketches?
Let's do it. Yeah, there's a lot to choose from. I mean, I basically just kind of went through YouTube and I just fell down the rabbit hole of political sketches. And I mean, I'll give SNL and YouTube credit. They, like all the clips they put up, it's pretty extensive. I saw stuff from, the very first season, saw some stuff from the 80s. 90s up to now. Like, I tried to put in a little bit of stuff that I liked and stuff that is sort of in the zeitgeist, so like everybody knows. I'll mention it later.
So I mean, what the way we do these things is we each come up with our own lists of what we feel are like the top five or our top five favorites, and we don't consult each other on our list beforehand. We might have an idea of what the other one has on their list, but we don't consult with each other. So we're going to surprise each other as we go through this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's one that I tweeted out that's not a surprise to you. It was more of a teaser, not a spoiler, but yeah, there is one I put out there. Cause as soon as we thought of this topic, I immediately thought of it. Cause it always tickled me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I found some interesting things in my research. I found, actually Al Franken, he did a thing for the Washington Post back in 2016, where he named his 10 favorite political sketches from SNL.
Oh, wow.
So it was interesting to see his reminiscences of those. And if some of those come up, I may go to what Franken had to say about them.
I didn't even know about that. I would actually love to hear that.
Well, maybe I'll share with you.
Ooh, I can't. Guys, stay tuned.
Yes.
We call that a teaser in the biz.
So I think a decent way to do this is not rank these sketches so much, but I thought it might make sense just to go through these in more or less chronological order. Does that sound good to you?
It sounds great to me. Doesn't sound good to me. It sounds great to me.
Okay. All right. So my first sketch is from the original cast era. It's a sketch called Nixon's Final Days, which is Dan Aykroyd as President Nixon. It's got Madeline Kahn, who was the host that week. She's writing her memoirs, and she's talking about what Nixon was like in the final days of his White House, of his presidential era. And it's got Dan Aykroyd as Nixon. It's got Chevy Chase and Gilda Radner as his son-in-law, David Eisenhower, and his daughter, Julie Nixon. John Belushi is Henry Kissinger, which, I mean, how can you not love that? And it's based partially on the Bob Woodward, Carl Bernstein book, The Final Days, which is talking about the final days of the Nixon White House. And it's like Nixon roaming the halls of the White House at night, and he's talking to the portraits of his predecessors. And the flashback starts out with Nixon just going like, you know, "You, Abraham Lincoln, you were lucky. They shot you."
That's the thing I like about early SNL. SNL now gets kind of dark, but not nearly as much as they used to back in the day. Like a joke like that, "They shot you." Like that's
Show really had an edge in this era, and it was interesting. It was years before I realized, like, when I was younger, I didn't really realize that SNL wasn't really on during the Nixon era, because Nixon resigned in 1974. So they're doing all this Nixon stuff after the fact. But of course there was still coverage of it and stuff. But it's interesting that they were going back several years to bash Nixon. This was a sketch. It was written by Al Franken and Tom Davis. And at one point, Nixon, he asked the portrait of Abraham Lincoln, he's like, "Why Abe? Why me?" And Al Franken says, in the original script, the portrait's lips move, saying, "Because you're such a schmuck." But the censors made us change it to "dip," because they insisted "schmuck" means penis in Yiddish. This was 1976, and we lost that one. So,
wow. I don't know, "dip" is a little bit funnier, but still, like, "schmuck" is "schmuck" with a smile on my face.
Schmuck's a funnier word, yeah.
Yeah, you're such a.
And it's also interesting that, like, this is an era when this is like when Dan Aykroyd had a mustache and he wouldn't shave his mustache to play Nixon.
Oh, right, because like they also had him as when he played at Jimmy Carter, and he had that mustache too.
Right, and it's also the same era where like Chevy Chase like wore no makeup to play President Ford. He just comes out and he was like, "Hi, I'm Gerald Ford," and he falls over some stuff, and that was it for everybody. And now they make this like this huge concerted effort to make everybody look like the person they're impersonating.
Yeah, like I did look at a bunch of old Chevy Chase as Ford sketches on YouTube. There was one, it's probably the first one they did, where they said, "And now the president of the United States, Gerald Ford." And of course, they pan in on Chevy Chase, just looking like Chevy Chase, no makeup at all. And across the screen, it had the words, "This is not a good impression of Gerald Ford." and then it said, "But Rich Little won't work for scale."
Wow. I don't remember that, but that sounds very funny.
Yeah, it's a sketch. It's one of their cold opens. It's like less than like a minute and a half long, called "Ford on the Phone." You can look at it and see Chevy Chase in all his goofy glory.
Chevy Chase, back in the day.
Oh, back in the day. The Nixon sketch.
The Nixon sketch. That was my first choice.
Oh, nice. It's a good choice. All right. As far as that goes, let's just keep on going with the Nixon theme. I found this one sketch this morning. Like, I didn't even really know about it. And, like, I kind of found out about it when I was watching a sketch that one of our fans was – one of our fans, Ruby the Roof, she tweeted at us this sketch, this Joe Piscopo as Ronald Reagan sketch. And then as I was watching that – I mean, we can talk about that one, too, because that one's pretty edgy. As I was looking at that, they had like a list of, "Oh, you might like these other sketches." And then I found this one sketch from 84 where it was the 60 Minutes cold open. where Tim Kazurinsky was interviewing Richard Nixon, and Piscopo was playing Nixon. Did you see this one?
No, I haven't heard of this one.
Oh. Have you seen this one? Have you heard about it? As soon as they said it, I realized, oh, I saw it.
Have you seen this? Have you heard about this?
Yeah, hey. This sketch I thought was really interesting, just because it was a cold open, really short, season 9, 1984, but the sketch takes place in April 14th, 1994. And they were referencing the interview that Nixon did with 60 Minutes back in 84. So, and they were saying, hey, you know, this is 10 years later. We did an interview with you back in 84. And do you have any more new info? And the basic gist of the sketch was that Nixon kind of lied about everything he said in 84. Now he's doing this new interview because he wants to make more money, and like how he can make a bundle off this new interview. And I don't know. It was really interesting because one of the questions that Tim Kazurinsky asked him was saying, how does it feel to be the most vilified man in America? And Piscopo, as Nixon, said, oh, I love it. Like, look, if you're going to lie, cheat, and betray a nation's trust, people will hate you. And if people hate you, they'll want to know all about you. And if they want to know all about you, they got to pay through the nose. Which was like, wow, that's an interesting thing to say. And then he goes on to say, hey, take George. Yeah, it's like, and then he says, take George McGovern. He helped the poor. He hated war. The entire country thought he was a saint. The sucker never made a nickel. And that cynical truth. Like as I was watching this, I remembered reading that tweet about how Trump might get like a book deal. And I was like, oh, wow, that's like this. And it was like, I don't know. There's just that biting truth to it that really drew me in.
Wow. Wow. That sounds like something else.
Yeah. And also, like, since this, I saw that the sketch is supposed to take place on April 14th, 1994. And then I thought, wait, was Nixon dead by then? And I looked it up. So this, like I said, this sketch takes place on April 14th, 1994. Nixon died April 22nd, 1994.
Wow.
I don't know how they did that. I'm sure it's just like a coincidence, but still, that's like super eerie.
That's kind of freaky. Wow.
It really is. So, that's one of my favorites. I didn't even know about it until Ruby the Rube sort of pushed me in that direction with another sketch that she tweeted to us about, which, you know, we'll get into it later.
Okay. All right. Well, my next sketch, it's one that I think you'll approve of. It's the one that you tweeted out earlier. It's President Reagan Mastermind from 1986. Yes. With the late, great Phil Hartman playing President Ronald Reagan. And this one, it's just, it's kind of brilliant in its simplicity. It's just, Reagan is sort of the doddering old man that we remember him as, sort of the lovable, well, yes, amen. And whenever the press is around, he's that persona. But then as soon as the press leaves, he's like, all right, back to work. And then he's just outlining all these evil schemes for everyone in his administration. Everyone's like, please, Mr. President, we can't keep up with the complexities of your plan. He's like, hey, I'm the only one who has to know.
I am the president.
Yeah. And it's wonderful just seeing him go back and forth between these two very different interpretations of Reagan, just changing characters on a dime. And I mean, it just shows how brilliant Phil Hartman was. And there was something I'd totally forgotten about, which is they bring in Dana Carvey as Jimmy Stewart, who just comes into the White House to visit Reagan. And he's like, oh, well, we sure had some great old times in Hollywood, didn't we, Dutch? and Reagan's trying to brush him off very quickly. And then on his way out, he's just like, you've become a real jerk, you know that?
Because at one point he says, he's trying to get him out of the office, and he says, Jimmy, don't make me have to kill you.
Yeah, and he's like, kill me? What are you talking about, Dutch?
It's a great sketch. It's a great premise to think that that whole persona he has is just an act to throw the people off. Like I really dug that one because it's something I don't know. It's something that I kind of wish. Well, now they kind of do it now, but not as much. Where they take this persona or as a person, they maybe kind of twist the perception a little bit and like put him in like a different, see him through a different lens. Like, what if this is what's really going on? Like, I don't know, I appreciate stuff like that.
Yeah. Here's what Al Franken had to say about that sketch in his Washington Post piece. He says, this was an idea from Robert Smigel, who voices Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. Robert and I did a first draft, and Jim Downey and George Meyer, who went on to be one of the top writers on The Simpsons, kicked in. Robert had my favorite joke. When Reagan's aide comes in to tell him that it's time to pose with the Girl Scout who sold the most cookies, Phil angrily says, "This is the part of the job I hate." So I like this because, I mean, it's very funny. It's a funny premise. And also, I think there was probably a degree of truth to it. I think probably Reagan did know more than he let on, certainly, about stuff that was going on. I mean, but, you know, of course, we now know that he was suffering from dementia, at least in his later years in office. So,
yeah, but just the idea of him, like you said, being this criminal mastermind that could like speak different languages, do complicated math equations in his head, quote Montesquieu. At one point, he quoted Montesquieu, and like, I don't know, it was just like a really hilarious juxtaposition that, like, I really did. That's why I tweeted it. I was like, this is one of my favorites. I really dig this sketch. And but it's all like the whole thing kind of hinges on Phil Hartman, you know, bolstering the sketch with his performance. And of course, as always, Phil Hartman does it masterfully because he's the best.
He carries this sketch. This sketch would not work without Phil Hartman's performance as Senoret. And just wonderfully done, man.
He's the best. And and if you want to, we'll ease into this one. If you want to talk about another sketch that's all Phil Hartman, we could talk about Bill Clinton going to the McDonald's. That sketch.
I'm not surprised you picked that one. I considered that one. I decided against it. Please tell us what you think about this one.
Interesting. All right. So this is from season 18, 1992. Bill Clinton, played by Phil Hartman. He's on a run with two Secret Service men, with Tim Meadows, Kevin Nealon, and of course they stop into a McDonald's after jogging literally three blocks. And, everybody in the McDonald's is like, oh, my God, it's the president. And he's saying, hey, he's being gracious to everybody. And, of course, all the while, he's eating food off of people's trays, saying, oh, at one point, Ellen Cleghorn has a baby. And Bill Clinton says, hey, that's a beautiful child. What's his name? Oh, her name's Shamika. It's like, oh, that's so beautiful. That means African princess, right? Oh, it's a beautiful baby. Say, you're going to finish those fries? And, of course, it's him. Him shoveling fries into his mouth, and he just goes from table to table, just, you know, eating Egg McMuffins with barbecue sauce on them. Just like, and like you can see he's actually eating the food. It's like actual, they got actual food there, and he's actually just chewing and shoveling and talking with his mouth full of food. At one point, somebody asks him about the sending the military forces to Somalia. I believe it's Rob Schneider. Mm-hmm. And he uses like the food to sort of articulate his point about, you know, sending military forces to Somalia, because like as they send food to different countries, they get intercepted by warlords, and he demonstrates by sort of intercepting the food that's supposed to go to the warlords. Like he'll say, oh, pretend this Big Mac is supposed to go to this country, but intercepted by warlords. And he takes a big bite out of the Big Mac and whatnot. And I think at one point he almost breaks because his mouth is so full of food. He has trouble chewing. He has trouble chewing and talking at the same time. But like, I think he had like a drink of somebody's milkshake and he got through it.
Yeah. Yeah. One line I really liked in that was like at the beginning, as they're entering the McDonald's, I think one of the Secret Service men says like, hey, we shouldn't tell Mrs. Clinton about this. And Phil Hartman as Clinton just says, hey, let me tell you something. There's going to be a lot of things we don't tell Mrs. Clinton about.
Hey-o, he's a hardo.
Yeah. It's a good sketch. It's not one of my personal favorites, but
Right. But yeah, again, that's a sketch that, you know, you need Phil Hartman to bolster it. Without him, the whole thing kind of falls apart. And as always, he delivers in spades. Hail Phil Hartman.
Yay, Phil Hartman.
Yay.
All right. Well, my next choice, it's also a Bill Clinton sketch. Well, actually, not quite a sketch. It's an appearance from Bill Clinton on Weekend Update. And it's Daryl Hammond as Bill Clinton. This was one that just popped into my head, and I looked it up to rewatch it. It's just kind of a quick 3-minute segment on Weekend Update, but it's Daryl Hammond as Bill Clinton reviewing the movie The American President. Do you remember this?
Yes, that's the one with Douglas, right? Michael Douglas?
Well, yeah, the movie was with Michael Douglas. Oh. I was asking if you remembered the Weekend Update segment.
Oh, I think you're talking about the movie. That segment, I kind of remember, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, Clinton comes on and he's just like, it's the heartwarming story of an American president who's raising a 12-year-old daughter because his wife has tragically died. I love this movie. and at one point, Norm MacDonald, who was the Weekend Update host at the time, he just says like, well, Mr. President, what did you love most about this movie? And he just goes, the dead wife. so it's just, he's just saying like, you know, Rob Reiner tapped into an essential American fantasy here of a young man who grows up to become president and his wife tragically dies and he's left with all the trappings of the office, free and unattached.
Yeah.
And at one point, Norm MacDonald asked him, like, well, I mean, in real life, would it be that easy to sneak a woman into the White House without any staffers finding out or talking to the press? And Clinton just goes, why? What have you heard? So I think it was just a great encapsulation of Bill Clinton. I think Daryl Hammond's Bill Clinton was my favorite Bill Clinton. Phil Hartman's was good, but I think Daryl Hammond's Clinton was on another level, and I loved him. He just played him as that sort of persistent horn dog guy, but he also nailed like certain of Clinton's mannerisms. He like the gesture where, you know, like politicians don't point because it comes off as too aggressive. So they do that weird thing where they're sort of holding their thumb and they point with their thumb. And he did the little lip bite when Clinton would be doing something like, I feel your pain. He just really nailed Bill Clinton. And I just wanted his Clinton to have some representation on this list.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, Daryl Hammond's Clinton, it's probably the Clinton. It's the one everybody judges other Clintons against. Like, if we're talking politics, I mean, of course, Daryl Hammond also had a Trump impression. I think Phil Hartman also did. Phil Hartman definitely, he did a Trump impression too, but Hammond's was better.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know. Daryl Hammond's always just been really good at like really zeroing in on one small thing in a character that like maybe most other people just didn't notice or maybe always knew was there, but just didn't really focus on it. But he's able to like sort of hone in and zero in and focus on that one little thing and sort of base an entire impression around that one little thing. And he pulls it off beautifully.
Yeah, yeah. Just wonderful stuff, man.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, so, what's next for you, Aaron?
All right. So we're going to go back a little bit. This one sketch I remember really loving when I was a kid, even though I didn't quite get all of it. But for some reason, it's one of the sketches that stood with me. I'm talking about the Bush-Dukakis debate from 1988.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Is that the one where Tom Hanks is playing Peter Jennings?
Yep. We have Phil Hartman as David Brinkley. This is a 14-minute sketch. This was way longer than I remembered. Yeah, I didn't remember it being this long, but you know, it's on YouTube, and sure enough, 14 minutes, and it's really good. We got John Lovitz as Dukakis. We got a young George H.W. Bush played by Carvey, of course. We'll get into, you know, Carvey's Bush impression a little bit later on. But yeah, for some reason, I don't know why, I really dug this sketch when I was a kid. I mean, I was only 11 when it came out, and like, of course, I didn't get all the nuances and the stuff they were talking about. There were little things they did that I really got a kick out of, like when Dukakis approached the podium because if you remember, Dukakis was notoriously short. So like they had John Lovitz go behind the podium, and then you just hear this whirring noise, this mechanical whirring noise, like, and as you hear that, you see John Lovitz like go up, up and up and up. So he has like some type of little mechanical thing he's standing on that elevates him up slowly enough so he can reach the microphone on the podium. Like stuff like that, I got a kick out of. And I remember really liking after the debate was over, when they had they decided to talk to Dan Quayle. And for Dan Quayle, they actually had like a 10-year-old kid play him. I thought that was hilarious.
Yes. Yeah. And yeah. He's like, he's going to be president. I'm going to be vice president. Isn't that neat?
Yeah. And then they asked him how he thought Bush did. And he's like, Bush, he did great. I'm so happy to be his running mate. He's going to be the next president, and I'm going to be the vice president. And that'll be great. Because, like, I remember, like, I still remember back in the day, like, Dan Quayle got a lot of guff for, like, being super young and naive and maybe not the brightest bulb in the box. There was, like, the whole potato fiasco and whatnot.
Yes.
So, like, so to have, like, an actual kid, like, it was, like, the kid looked like maybe, like, 12 or something, 11 or 12. Just to have an actual kid play Dan Quayle, I thought was pretty inspired.
Yeah, that was a good bit of satire. I like that quite a bit.
Yeah, and I'm also remember like the one of the biggest laughs that was in the sketch where I think George H.W. Bush was saying something that was just seemed incredibly ridiculous, and then they go back to Dukakis for a rebuttal, and Dukakis says, "I can't believe I'm losing to this guy," and it just got a huge laugh.
That was. Let me see if I can find that. Okay, yeah. Al Franken says that was only the second time that Dana Carvey played George H.W. Bush. He hadn't quite found the character, but, the hydraulic lift for Dukakis's podium, that was a Conan O'Brien idea. And,
of course it was.
Yeah. And they said that, on air, you heard the whine of the lift is as John Lovitz rose. He stood on a small box and controlled his elevation by bending, then straightening his knees. So that was cool. And the line, "I can't believe I'm losing to this guy," that was written by Franken. He says, "But what made the laugh was the exquisite setup written by Jim Downey and brilliantly executed by Dana and Jan Hooks as a sultry Diane Sawyer. Stay on course. 1,000 points of light. Well, unfortunately, I guess my time is up. Mr. Vice President, you still have 1:20. What? That can't be right. I must have spoken for at least 2 minutes. No, just 40 seconds, Mr. Vice President." So, yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, that was, I mean, it's a long one. It's like a lot longer than I remembered, but like there's some good stuff in there. I mean, Jim Downey, like you can, like if you're an SNL nerd like us, you can definitely tell like a joke that has like a Jim Downey stamp on it or a Conan O'Brien stamp on it. And like this, as you just said, this one has, you know, the stench of Downey and O'Brien all over it. And I am loving it.
I don't know if it's a stench. I'm sure they have lovely scents.
It's a good stench. It's an aroma.
The aroma of Conan and Jim Downey.
I'll say that. The aroma. The aroma wafting through the nostrils.
Okay. Well, my next choice is one from 2008. This was Sarah Palin and Hillary Clinton address the nation. This was
one of mine.
That's one of your choices. Cool.
Yeah.
This was Tina Fey and Amy Poehler as respectively Sarah Palin and Hillary Clinton. This was at the tail end of the 2008 campaign. We were, I think, about 6 weeks out from the election. And they're addressing sexism in the campaign, how both of them were perceived because they were women, and like Sarah Palin became like this weird sort of sex symbol for the right wing, and Hillary was constantly I don't know what the right word is, but she got a lot of grief because she was a woman, and you know people were always calling her shrill or whatever.
Oh right, there was one point where I think the two of them together said, don't call me a MILF. And she says, and don't refer to me as a flirt. I Google it and I do not like it.
Yes. Yes. And it has a line that is so freaking clever, and it so nails like what the perception of Sarah Palin was, that I think to this day, some people think that Sarah Palin actually said it when she was the line, "I can see Russia from my house," which was an exaggeration of something that when Sarah Palin was asked about like foreign policy experience, she explained like how close like the tip of Alaska was to Russia and how that somehow qualified as foreign policy experience. But yeah, I can see Russia from my house. That's, oh God, that's brilliant.
I remember that line. Like, I mean, I remember this entire sketch was like, you know, it's part of the SNL like pantheon. It's such a great sketch. And then like, it really had some amazing lines in it like that. Like I can see Russia from my house. I didn't remember, honestly, until you just mentioned it, I kind of did think that Sarah Palin did say that. And then, like, after hearing what you said, I was like, oh, wait, no, she didn't say that. That was totally Tina Fey. I mean, yeah. It sounded so close to something that Sarah Palin might say that it sounded real.
I mean, exactly. I think that was what made it such a brilliant joke, which was, I mean, because let's face it, Sarah Palin did say a lot of dumb things over the campaign, and she was just, I think it's safe to say, out of her depth during that campaign. And I really think that Tina Fey's impression of Sarah Palin did a lot to torpedo the McCain-Palin ticket. I mean, I think they probably would have done better in the election if it hadn't been for that.
I could sort of see that, yeah. I mean, it is a weird thing. Like, I remember when Sarah Palin first came on the scene, I think there's something we mentioned on the last episode with J.L. Colvin, where like nowadays, like we have like a lot of celebrities coming into play, politicians on SNL. And I think this started with this, where like, when Sarah Palin first came out, people were like, people online were like, oh my gosh, she looks just like Tina Fey. They should have Tina Fey play her. Tina Fey, Tina Fey, Tina Fey. And then they got Tina Fey to play her. And then like the video went viral and it just became this huge thing.
Yeah, and I remember in Tina Fey's book Bossy Pants, she talked about that. And I mean, Lorne Michaels said it was like the first time the audience kind of cast a character. And I think it was probably just so many people hadn't realized that Tina Fey had been off SNL for a few years by that point. They thought she was like still a current cast member, but she was off doing 30 Rock. And that's why it was like somewhat questionable if they would get her back to do it. But, you know, she did it as a favor, more or less, to SNL. And it's something else. And she also talked about how it, like, in only about a month's time when she did the Sarah Palin character, it cycled through the basic life of an SNL character, where it's, like, the thrill of the new, and then it kind of plateaus, and it peaks and plateaus, and then people are almost sick of it by the end.
Yeah, very much so.
And we cycled through that in about a month.
Yeah, it was one of those things where people loved it. Like you said, people loved it at first. And then, you know, of course, the thing that, you know, a lot of shows and SNL does is, oh, people love this. Let's bring it back again and again and again. And then before you know it, you get sick of it. Because it was such a good impression, and like, I don't like it had like a lot of strong writing. I'm sure most of it's from Tina Fey.
Yeah,
and it was just like a powerful sketch. Like, you know, rewatched that sketch, I rewatched the other sketch they had, the follow up, where it was Poehler and Fey as Sarah Palin and Diane Sawyer, where like they were recreating the Diane Sawyer interview, where, like, you know, it's she, like, I still remember it today too, like with Tina Fey, where Sarah Palin was kind of like a deer in the headlights, where I think Diane Sawyer or Katie Couric? It might be
Katie Couric.
I apologize.
Katie Couric said, like, well, what newspapers do you read? And Sarah Palin was like, well, all of them.
Yeah, and people were like, just name a newspaper, and it seemed like you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And like, so they recreated that. They brought on a very pregnant Amy Poehler at that point to sort of ask the question again, like, you know, just name one newspaper, and she gets caught in a deer in the headlights and be like, Katie, I would like to use one of my lifelines.
Which is, yes,
of
course,
that's back when Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was all over the place.
Yes.
But yeah, that sketch was, that's another fantastic sketch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and Tina Fey had a really good impression of her, and yeah, it was something else. And I'd also like to give a shout out to Amy Poehler's Hillary Clinton. I mean, she has a great line in there where, like Tina Fey's Sarah Palin is talking about how, like, you know, America is so amazing, and you can even become vice president if you just want it enough. And then Hillary just starts laughing ruefully, and she's like, yeah, that was probably my problem. I probably should have wanted it more.
Yeah. And then she, like, rips out part of the podium with her bare hands.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Little did we know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, like, I think at one point Tina Fey says, yeah, well, this is what makes America great, because anybody can be president.
Yeah. Anybody. Like, anyone.
Literally anyone, as we've seen.
Yeah. No,
let's not talk about that.
Let's not. Let's, because it's depressing.
Happier times.
Happier times.
Okay. Well, I can go into my next sketch. Speaking of happier times, we can talk about the Iraq War.
The Iraq War.
Well, it's not the Iraq War, but it's this one cold open I saw when I fell into the whole rabbit hole of political sketches, where it's from September 1990. Where Dana Carvey gives his George H.W. Bush impression, and he talks to the people in Iraq through Iraqi state TV. It's a really interesting one, because, like, he's talking to the Iraqi people about, you know, how U.S. views the illegal seizure of Kuwait, and he feels like the first time he's talked to the people, they didn't quite get the message he was trying to convey, like how they really opposed it. So he was talking to them in sort of the language they understood. So it was like him kind of talking to them like a dictator would, but in his George H.W. Bush voice. So he's saying, you know, your leader, the godless liar, Saddam Hussein, he's a hyena in the skin of a lion. America, we're like a great scorpion. And so he was like talking to them in that vernacular. And he said, like, you know, do not mess with us. We are America. We are great. We are like a scorpion and a cobra, and your children shall wander aimlessly. Their reasons shall desert them, and they will not know where their father's bones are buried. And he said this all in his
voice. I mean, it was tough for me to pick, like, just one Dana Carvey, George H.W. Bush sketch, because, I mean, he took that character to such an incredible, bizarre place. I mean, it became so exaggerated by the end, you know, the Nakanada, and just that weird nonsensical way of speaking. And by the end, it didn't really have much relation to how George H.W. Bush really spoke, but it was so funny, you didn't care, you know?
Yeah, it's the voice and the hand gestures. He just was able to sort of, it's like jazz, man. He was just able to, like, kind of freestyle it.
Yeah.
So then after George Bush gives this, Bush gives a speech to the Iraqi people, then they cut to sort of these Iraqi, like, news pundits giving their analysis of the address of what they said. And it's, you know, kind of four SNL cast members in, like, brown face. So it's like Tom Davis, Kevin Nealon, and Phil Hartman dressed as, you know, people from Iraq, and Jen Hooks wearing a burqa. And so they asked the panel, what do you think of Bush's address? And Tom Davis says, oh, I was impressed. It seems like he's a madman we can deal with. And Kevin, and then Kevin Nealon says, I was really struck by the line about how our children will not know where our bones are buried. I mean, I have several grandchildren, and I want them to know where my bones are buried. I don't know. Again, like, it's another sketch where they take the impression and they view it through a different lens and, like, another perspective. And I don't know. I really got a kick out of that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want them to know where my bones are buried. I don't know why that makes me smile so much.
Yeah, no, I can just imagine him saying that line.
And I'm sure that's a Jim Downey or a Conan O'Brien line. That's I mean, it's from 1990s, whoever was there at the time. But still, it tickled my ribs, as the kids say.
Okay. Well, I guess it's my turn again. So this one is the most recent one in time, but I rewatched it this morning, and I think it really was something else. This one was just called Election Night, and this is from 2016. This was when the second to last time that Dave Chappelle hosted, where it was just a bunch of Democratic voters. They're watching the election returns in November of 2016, and they're expecting to see Hillary Clinton elected. And then it's going periodically throughout the night, just like moving up a half hour or an hour each time. And just their gradual dawning realization. Oh my God, Donald Trump is winning. Oh my God, you guys, I think America's kind of racist. And we've got Dave Chappelle just like, yeah, you think America's racist? I think I remember my great grandfather telling me something like that. Yeah, I think when he was in chains, he told me something about that. And it's got Chris Rock, too, making a surprise cameo. It's really good, and it just shows... It's just a great satire of just what a bubble some people live in, according to their personal beliefs. And, it was really good.
That's a great pick. Like, see, that's the kind of sketch I kind of hoped and I kind of wish Dave Chappelle did on his last performance last week when he hosted.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming they just didn't have time to write a sketch like that because the result just happened just that day. So they didn't have really... So, I mean, if you remember that last episode, there weren't too many sketches around, you know, centered around the election. There was like the, you know, maybe the one where they were driving away in the white Bronco, the final sketch, which was, like, you know, a few minutes long. But like every other sketch they had really didn't deal with the election that much, you know, except for the cold open and weekend update. So, but like part of me wished they had enough time to like write a sketch like that one. Cause that really was an amazing sketch where, like they were kind of taking it through a different lens where, you know, white people, white liberals are kind of coming to the realization that the same realization black people have had for, you know, decades. We're like, yeah, America's pretty much like this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like at one point, Cecily Strong's character is like, can you guys imagine what it's like to be a woman in this country where, you know, no matter what you do, you just can't get ahead. And then it just cuts to Dave Chappelle and Chris Rock going like, can we imagine that? I mean, it's, I still consider this a political sketch though, because it really does make a point about politics. It doesn't have anybody impersonating any politician, but I thought it was brilliant back in 2016. And yeah, like you, I was kind of hoping for a semi sequel to it where they did like a similar premise of them watching election returns, but, it was not to be, I guess.
I guess not. I guess Chris Rock said, "Well, I already did the show, so I ain't come back." And Dave Chappelle was like, oh, "I'll just do two sketches." But still, that's a great pick, man. Wow, I wish I thought of that one. Holy moly!
Well, you didn't, did you? Did you, Darren?
Right.
Oh, no,
I didn't.
No, that was me.
I brought great shame to my family. Well, another sketch we could talk about. It's actually one my sister tweeted at us about. She was my sister at Bacon Awesome Love saying, I was just watching this last weekend. The first appearance was the best. It was manic and loud and ridiculous, but hit every fucking beat. Favorite art is where she drove the podium into the audience. I guess she meant favorite part. And of course, I'm talking about when Melissa McCarthy came on as Sean Spicer.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, wow. All right.
Not one of my favorites. I got to be honest. Really? Yeah, that was never one of my favorites.
All right.
Yeah. It was. I don't know. But you know, you talk about what you like about it.
Well, I mean, I always dug it because, I mean, for one thing, no one saw it coming. I mean, if you watch the first time they did it, I mean, maybe I'll go with you, like, the other times they did it were a little not as strong because they were just kind of repeating what they did the first time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, same how when Matt Foley, you see him the first time, you can't really recreate that because you're just doing the same beats over and over again. They did they did further on out.
Right.
But I mean, when they first said it was Sean Spicer, you can hear the audience where, like, at first they applaud, and then they slowly realize, oh, hey, that's Melissa McCarthy. And then you hear another roar of applause, like, after they slowly realize, oh, that's Melissa McCarthy. And, I mean, I just really liked how Melissa played it as this, like, screaming, always angry, aggro kind of lunatic and just... You know, there's always a thing about the gum. She's always chewing gum and showing the press the props because they don't, you know, because she, you know, is insulting them. They don't understand what she's saying. And the part where one of the reporters asks, hey, you know, I have a question. Are you okay? Is everything all right? And she just literally picks up the podium and just jams it into the, like, I didn't see that coming. And I thought that was
hilarious.
This came out of nowhere. And I don't know. I mean, of course, it's again, there's another sketch where it really depends on one person to really make it go. And if that one person can't make it go, then the whole sketch falls apart. And I mean, I'll give it up for Melissa. Like, she had all the energy and, like, the all, you know, she had everything it takes to make this thing work. And I don't know. I really dug it.
Yeah, that was one that got old for me really fast. I felt like they really drove it into the ground because, like, it seemed like almost every show for, I think, at least a month, they were having Melissa McCarthy as Sean Spicer. So I got very tired of it very quickly. So
I can see that. I mean,
if it had been just one sketch, I think I would have loved it, you know?
Right, but again, it's that thing with Sarah Palin, like we talked about, where people were like, oh, this did well, this hit, because it really did hit. Like, people were... like, you know, retweeting it and sharing it all over the interwebs. And it became like a big deal. And it's that thing that they do where it's like, oh, it was a hit. Let's bring it back 9 or 10 more times and hit the exact same beats. Don't really change anything. Amp it up here or there. And yeah, it doesn't work the, you know, second, third, fourth or fifth time as much because all the surprises are gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. But, like, the first time they did it, like, the first time Matt Foley, Chris Farley came out as Matt Foley, the first time is, I thought, when it all worked, just because of the surprise of it and, like, how, like, you know. I'll just say that it was, like, shockingly good and surprising.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So, I mean, that's my five. Right, do you have anything that you wanted to give an honorable mention to?
Sure, absolutely. Well, I mean, there's one. Well, I mean, checking on the Twitter, there was one that I mentioned earlier that Ruby the Rube tweeted us about. she said, "Oh, here it goes. It was rarely laugh out loud funny, but I liked how aggressive early '80s SNL was towards Reagan." So, and then she tweeted at me this, or tweeted at us this sketch, Reagan Brand Economics. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but
no, I didn't watch it.
It's this, okay, so it's this sketch from April of '82. It's about Reagan Brand Economics. It's sort of done in a commercial style. So in the beginning of the commercial, we see this kind of really, you know, down in their luck family. It's Tony Rosato, Christine Ebersol. Christine Ebersol is feeding their kids this type of gruel in bowls in the kitchen. She's saying it's a rat tail gumbo. And then she talks to her husband saying, you know, this, you know, we're in dire times. The husband hasn't had a job in months because of his terrible economy. And then Ronald Reagan, as played by Joe Piscopo, pops in and says, hey, guys, what's the problem? And he says, oh, hey, Reagan. Yeah, we're really, you know, hitting hard times here. Just this economy is terrible. And Reagan says, why don't you try Reagan Brand Economics? And I think Tony says, well, Reagan Brand Economics, but I only like real economic programs. And then, of course, and Reagan says, no, Reagan Brand Economics is a real economic program. It's 100% supply side economics, but with no human compassion whatsoever. They really get in there. And so they try Reagan brand economics, and 3 months go by, and they have plenty of, rat tail gumbo for all. And, Ronald Reagan says, like, hey, what'd you think of Reagan brand economics? And they're like, oh, we loved it. Thanks to Reagan brand economics, two of our three kids are dead, and we sold the other one. It's like really dark. And then,
like it.
Yeah, and then he looks, and then Reagan looks into the camera saying, from Reagan brand economics from Washington, where the DC stands for don't care.
Well,
there were definitely
wasn't expecting Terry Rizzuto's name to come up during this episode, but
no one expects Tony Rizzuto's name to come up.
Yeah. But wow, okay.
Yeah, but yeah, if you ever go into like the old SNL episodes, like especially from the early 80s, there were definitely a lot more kind of scathing and cynical towards, like, Reagan and most politicians in general. Where I think now we kind of play them up as like doofuses and, goofy
folks. That is true. Yeah, we do tend to go easier on them these days, or the show does, at least.
Absolutely. I mean, especially I'm liberal Democrat too, but like I definitely see like they do go easier on the Democratic nominees than they do the Republican. They definitely don't go as hard on them as like they used to back in the day.
But I mean, even like when, like during the George W. Bush years, Will Ferrell's take on George W. Bush was more just like doofus frat guy than anything,
Right. Like, they kind of went a little harder on when Daryl Hammond played Dick Cheney, because, Dick Cheney's a horrible person. But they went a little bit harder on him than they did Bush, because, like, they figured Bush was, like you said, like some goofy, like, hey, I'm just here to have a good time, man. Just a good old boy.
Never meaning no harm.
Yeah, just sliding across the General Lee into the driver's seat.
Yep. Yeah. Making their way the only way they know how.
Damn you, Bush boys! Oh, man. The bushes of hazard. Yeah.
Yes.
That works. Oh, boy. So, that was a sketch. That's a sketch Ruby the Rube told me about that I never knew about, and I was like, wow, they were pretty brutal back in those days.
Yeah, yeah. There's one sketch I'd like to give an honorable mention to. It was Republican Debate 88. This was from season 13, episode 11, with Justine Bateman and hosting and Terrence Trent D'Arby musical guesting, which that is the most 1988 host and musical guest combination I can think of.
Oh, Wishing Well is my jam.
But I think this one was notable just because it had Dan Aykroyd making a cameo appearance as Bob Dole. And Bob Dole was just so brilliant. He was just like, I don't believe my good friend George Bush. He's lying. He knows it. You know it. I know it. The people at home know it. The American people know it. We all know it. And just like Aykroyd just nailed Bob Dole's cadences. And I thought it was just amazing. Just wonderful. So
I got to go back and look at that. I forgot Aykroyd did a Dole, just because I think we all know, like, Norm Macdonald's Dole as, like, the definitive Dole.
Yeah, I mean, Aykroyd, I don't know if he ever did Dole beyond this one, but it was just so memorable. And it's also memorable because if I remember the sketch correctly, I couldn't find a video of the sketch, but I did find a transcript of it. And at one point, Aykroyd actually starts to break a little bit, like when he's in the middle of one of those Bob Dole rants. But he just kind of nailed Dole's sort of crabby older guy persona. At one point he's talking about how, I didn't grow up with a silver spoon in my mouth. I didn't have the machine that throws the tennis balls at you.
All right.
Yeah, just really good. I'd love to watch that sketch again. So,
all right, I'll give it a look-see. Yeah, I mean, from what I remember of Norm's Doll, like I remember it was an all right doll. I thought it was pretty good, but it just seemed. Do you have any thoughts on Norm's Bob Dole impression?
It was good. I enjoyed it. It was fun when he popped up, particularly when they did something like totally absurd with him, like having him be one of the people on the Real World.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
That was fun. I know that Norm got kind of sick of playing Bob Dole. Like they went to that well a little too much for his taste. And also I think it was by that point, Norm was like, I only want to do Update. I really don't care about anything else in the show. So.
That seems fair. Yeah. I mean, he knows where his strengths lie. He knows he's not like a character. Yeah. Like, I mean, when I think of Norm in SNL, I just think of him as a Weekend Update guy. And he did the Bob Dole thing. That's just because he'd done it enough times and it kind of took off. But as far as like him being in other sketches, I think even he knew that wasn't his strong suit.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We talked about Dole. We could talk about Daryl Hammond's Al Gore impression. I didn't realize how many impressions like so many of the cast members did. Like Phil Hartman did Trump and he did Reagan and he did Clinton. Mm-hmm. And then Daryl Hammond did Gore and he did Clinton and he did Cheney. And of course,
yeah, Cheney was good.
Yeah, yeah, he had a good Cheney. Carvey had the, of course, George H.W. Bush, and he had the Ross Perot.
Mm-hmm.
Can I finish? Like, that was something everybody was saying back in the day.
Franken, in his Washington Post piece, he says that at one point they called Dana Carvey into Lorne's office to show him footage of Ross Perot. I guess this was early in his political campaign. And Dana Carvey looked at it and he was just like, wow, that's like a fully formed comic character right there. And I mean, he didn't really have to exaggerate Perot much.
I could see it because I remember Perot back in the day. Like, I think people were like comparing him to like a little Yosemite Sam type of character where he's just, you know, just short and full of piss and vinegar.
He says that. Go ahead.
No, I wasn't going to say anything.
Oh, okay. It sounded like you were in the middle of something.
No.
They said that after the first time Dana Carvey played Perot, they got a call on the Monday after the show, and Ross Perot had called for Dana to compliment him on the impression. And he says, we put in a call to Perot, each of us on a different extension. When we got him, Perot told Dana, tell you what we do. You get on that costume and makeup and go around the country. Then there'll be two of me. Cover twice the territory. And he says, Dana kept trying to introduce me, the writer, but Perot clearly wasn't interested. He just kept repeating the joke or serious pitch. I'm not sure which.
All right.
So,
politics, people.
Yeah.
Wow, I did not know that. Holy moly. Wow, that's some food for thought.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. I didn't put too many. I didn't really write down anything for like the Obama era of SNL because like as far as impressions go, it seemed like they never really. I mean, they kind of nailed it once they had Jay Farrell on because he had a good like Obama impression. But like before that, it was Fred Armisen.
Yeah,
because he looked.
Obama always seemed just kind of serviceable, and I don't think they ever really nailed Obama. I don't remember Jay Farrell doing it for very long, did he?
He didn't do it for too long, but like, he did a decent. He did it. It was definitely better than Armisen, but as far as Armisen's Obama, it was never quite there. I mean, I also think they probably just gave it to him because he looks kind of ethnically ambiguous. I guess you could say. Or they didn't really have because it was before they had Keenan, I think, and like. They didn't have any other black cast members that are like, oh, Armisen, he looks like something. Put him in a suit.
He looks like something. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like Armisen got it more because of looks than because he had any particular take on Obama or could impersonate him really well. I think the most memorable thing they did with Obama was probably when they had The Rock on and they did the Rock Obama, where he just sort of hulks out into the rock when Republicans finally push him too far.
Right, and that was pretty good. Like, and they just had Dwayne Rock Johnson just, you know, break Republicans in half and stuff.
Yes.
That was pretty cool.
Uh-huh.
That was pretty neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty neat. And, I mean, I guess as far as this era with, you know, Trump and stuff, we've probably talked about ad nauseum. I think we've made our feelings clear on how we feel about the Alec Baldwin Trump era.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, maybe I'll feel differently when we have some more distance between us and this, you know, the Trump era. I'm just kind of sick. I didn't review any of the Alec Baldwin Trump sketches or anything like that. I didn't want to do anything that recent.
Yeah, no, I'm the same here. I just, like, if you want to know what we feel about Trump, just go back a couple of years to our old episodes. But yeah, I was just like, let's not do any Trump. I didn't really look at any Hillary Clinton sketches. I mean, we could talk about the infamous Hallelujah cold open with her and the piano, but I mean, I think we kind of left our, I think we kind of talked about it.
Yeah. Didn't like it. I like the show when it's funny. I don't like the show as much when it's sentimental, or when it's like, when it's unearned sentiment, I guess I should say. I mean, it's fine after, like, you know, when after 9/11 happened and they did their first show back. I mean, you know, that's when you want to do that. But, yeah, I didn't feel like the Hallelujah thing was quite earned.
Yeah, I'm the same. I agree. Like, I agree with the sentiment because, you know, after that election happened, I was super depressed and I was, like, in a really bad place. And, like, that, you know, that performance echoed what I was feeling, but I don't think it's the right tone for, it's not the right tone to strike for the beginning of a comedy variety show. Like, yeah. I agree with the sentiment. I don't think it's what the show needs, though. It needed mm-hmm. at that time.
Yeah. I'll say that. Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's all I got. Did you want to talk about the Al Franken list and what he had? What are some of his favorites?
We hit on a lot of them. Let's see. He mentions a few others. Let me just skip around. He mentioned there was an Ask President Carter sketch that they did in 1977, which the most memorable moment from that was President Carter talking down a guy having a bad acid trip.
And I saw that on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah, he says, you know, there were these little orange pills, and President Carter, were they barrel-shaped? Yes. All right. Okay, you did some orange sunshine, Peter. Just remember, you're a living organism on this planet, and you're very safe. You've taken a heavy drug. Relax, stay inside, listen to some music, okay? Do you have any Allman Brothers? He mentioned a sketch I don't remember at all called The Amazing Colossal President, which was where President Carter gets enlarged from the radiation at Three Mile Island. And so it's like a spoof of the the Amazing Colossal Man. And
I kind of remember that one. Yeah. Cause
yeah.
I think that's the one where they had like Garrett Morris as like a cleaning maid. So they put her, and she got in there by accident.
Yes. Yes. And they say at one point, played by Rodney Dangerfield, breaks the news to Lorraine Newman's Rosalind Carter that her husband has grown very big. How big? He's big, I'm telling you. Let me put it this way. He's so big he could have an affair with the Lincoln Tunnel.
He's big, so, I tell you. He's a big man.
He also mentions the Clarence Thomas hearings, which was a sketch they did about the all-male senators on the Senate Judiciary Committee questioning Anita Hill. And then they just kind of get sidetracked into a discussion of porn. And what kind of porn women like versus what men like.
As you do. I'm assuming this is mostly male writing staff at this point.
Let's see. Does he say who wrote it? He says Jack Handy, who rarely wrote political sketches, conceived this one.
Handy.
You know, Jack Handy, he was the guy behind Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer, Toons is the Driving Cat, and Deep Thoughts. And he says, Jack's idea was that the senators on the committee, all men, would ask Clarence Thomas how to pick up women.
All right.
I remember that one.
I kind of remember that one. It's been a while, but I mean, mm-hmm. it sounds not too bad. I mean, you know, Clarence Thomas. Yeah. It's a choice.
Yeah, it's a choice.
And I mean, that's all I got. I mean, we also could talk about how. I mean, I know we've talked about how, like, you know, non-cast members have played political people recently, but you know, it's not a new thing because there's also the episode when Robin Williams hosted and he played Ronald Reagan way back in the day, back in 86.
I barely remember that.
Oh, really? Yeah, Robin Williams has a pretty decent Ronald Reagan impression. There's one sketch on YouTube you can see where because he's about to give like a speech in front of the reporters, like the daily news briefing, and his men behind the scenes like, hey, we know you have trouble remembering things, so we put like a little thing in your ear and
Okay, I remember this now.
Right, and then of course as he goes up there, the frequency of the radio, you know, gets jambled, and it goes to like the radio stations, and it's like Ronald Reagan, you know, saying, hey, you know, it's an all you know, 60s rock block here on WKRT with the Doors. And it's like, it's him like saying out loud all these radio station things. Like he's giving like an advertising for a toothpaste in Spanish, like, oh, con game and whatnot. And so it's like, oh, that's a pretty funny one.
Yeah. I vaguely remember that one, but I haven't seen that in ages.
It's an oldie, but I would say a goodie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, going more recent, like, who's Hillary Clinton did you like better? Did you like Amy Poehler's, or do you like what Kate McKinnon's been doing with the character for the last few years?
Huh. I might give the edge to Poehler on mm-hmm. that one. I mean, they are somewhat similar, what the two of them do, but I think... That's a good question. I don't know. I think there's something in the way Poehler plays it that like I like a little bit more. Maybe it's because it's, I don't know. I think I just like Poehler a little bit more. I can't put my finger on why though. I'm gonna have to think about that one. Well, what about you? What are you thinking?
I don't know if I have a preference. I enjoy them both. I guess Poehler's maybe like a notch above Kate McKinnon's, but they're both very, very good. I think they both capture her well. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I was also thinking about how, like, as far as political sketches go, like the only one that's playing like a ton of political characters in, you know, in this new cast is Kate. I mean, because Kate played Hillary Clinton, she played Giuliani, she played Sessions. Lindsey Graham, Pelosi, Elizabeth Warren. I mean, like, it's literally like anytime there's like somebody in politics, they're just like, give it to Kate, she'll do it.
Yeah. Well, I feel like also part of that, she's played so many people in the Trump administration. I feel like some of that was intentional trolling, because I remember, I guess it was when they cast Melissa McCarthy as Sean Spicer, that really seemed to get Trump's goat, having a woman play a man. So I feel like they kept doing that a lot just to get to Trump, you know?
Yeah. I think like they made it a point to do that. Cause I think I remember A.D. Bryan also did that too, where they had her play like a, was it maybe Rex Tillerson or something like that? But they had her play like a man, and like that seemed to be like their way of jabbing at them.
Mm-hmm.
They're like getting their goat, as the kids say.
Yeah, exactly.
And, so I think that's all I got. I mean, I think we covered a lot of ground here, man. Wow, we did.
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, for most of the last 40, 50 years, SNL has been commenting on the politics of the day. So it's really interesting to look back on them and just kind of remember like, oh, yeah, I remember when this was a thing. Remember when that was this. And, yeah, so...
Yeah, it's definitely like going into like a time capsule or like a little time machine where you're like, oh, yeah, I remember that was a thing. Oh, yeah, Lewinsky, that was a thing. Oh, yeah, this was a thing, that was a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice little look back.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right, so yeah, that's our episode, guys.
It for this week.
That's it for this week, my friend. I think I read most of the tweets that we got from folks. There was one. Let me see what else we got. We got a tweet from Trixie Ask saying, they were expecting SNL to do an all celebrity Jeopardy compilation because Alex Trebek and Sean Connery have passed away. Which, I kind of expected them to do that too, but I guess not.
If they did a compilation of all those, it would get really monotonous, I think. You don't want to watch all those back to back.
Yeah, you want to spread it out. Okay, I could see that.
Yeah, it's a fun novelty. It's in like a single episode, but if you're watching them all at once, it just you see the formula very quickly. And actually, on Saturday, they reran a show from 96 with Martin Short and No Doubt, and they had, which was maybe one of the first, if not the first, Jeopardy sketch. And I guess that's part of why they picked this episode. And it had Daryl Hammond as Sean Connery, but it wasn't, he hadn't quite evolved it into the Sean Connery it became. And it was when Norm Macdonald was still playing Burt Reynolds on the sketches, because that was originally conceived as a way for him to show off his Burt Reynolds impression. And it wasn't as good as it later became. It's not the Jeopardy sketch that everyone remembers. It was like, oh, okay, you've kind of half figured it out here. But Martin Short was playing Jerry Lewis.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. It had funny moments, but it wasn't what the Jeopardy sketch became. Yeah.
It wasn't anal bum covers and all that jazz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Once they had anal bum covers, they knew they struck gold.
Yes, exactly. You know, or the whore's semen.
Oh, Lord. I'm such a child. That still gets me.
Yeah. They did some clever wordplay.
Yeah. So Monette Marotti tweeted at us saying, "We did stop when Miley Cyrus hosted. It's both a great music video and a parody and a political sketch." That's if you see it, that's like I believe it's a music video when Miley Cyrus hosted and she played Michelle Bachman in the video, and it's like her recreating her We Can't Stop video and having like a political twist to it. And a few people tweeted at us, of course, George W. Bush's played by Will Ferrell, using the word strategery, which I feel like that became an actual word for a while. Like people were like, didn't he use it? Like the real George W. Bush use it in a sentence, strategery?
You mean as a callback to the SNL sketch?
I don't know. No, I feel like he used it in an actual, like, you know, sketch or actual address or debate or something.
I doubt that. I don't think he did. W had his, you know, malaprops and things like that, but I don't think that's anything he actually said.
All right. You say.
If you want to do the research on it, feel free. I'm not going to.
I'm looking it up right now. Yeah, no, he made it up. Okay. It sounded like something that Bush would say.
Yeah.
Okay. Bush is strategic. All right. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Of course I'm right. Never doubt me again.
Oh, yes, sir. All right. And that's our episode, guys. Thanks again for listening. And as always, you can follow us on Twitter at SNL Nerds Show. Give us a follow. Listen to the podcast as always. Rate, review. Share the love. Tell a friend. Tell a buddy. Tell an enemy. Tell somebody. Tell somebody you barely know. Let's get this thing off the ground, people.
Yeah, yeah. And you can follow our individual pages. I'm at Trumbull Comic, TrumbullL, and the word comic.
And I'm at Darren Credible, Twitter and Instagram. That's Darin Credible.
Mm-hmm. And do we want to say what we're doing next week, Darren?
Let's tell the people what we're doing next week, my friend.
All right, you go ahead.
All right, well, I came across this movie, just goofing around on TV as you do. We're going to talk about this movie called The Opening Act. That's movie about stand-up comedy. It has Jimmy O. Yang, Cedric the Entertainer, and directed by Steve Byrne, a comedian, and had a bunch of other comedians in it too, like Bill Burr, Ken Jeong, Neil Brennan, Tom Segura. And you might be saying to yourself, well, hey, guys, I know you guys are stand-ups and all, and that's great, but what does this movie have to do with SNL? Well, I'll tell you, Smarty Pants, this movie also has Alex Moffat and Brooks Whelan in it. So we figure that's good enough. So let's talk about the opening act.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing this. I haven't seen it before. You haven't seen it before. It's going to be new to both of us.
Yeah, yeah. We have heard good things. So, we're both in the world of stand-up comedy. A thing that used to happen, back when the world was new, back before the end days. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be good to like sort of see this movie through the eyes of a stand-up comedian. We can like take it apart and be like, oh no, that never happens. They don't pay you that much to open for a guy, and we can look at it through our cynical eyes.
Yes. So that'll be fun. So that's next week on the SNL Nerds. So tune in for that.
Indeed. And that's our show, guys. I don't know. Any final words? Anything to say? Or how do we end this?
We could just, peter out like you just did and just suck all the energy out of the room. That might be good.
We could do that. We could. How do we normally do it? Should we just...
We have a little catchphrase that we use at the end.
We do?
The thing, and then that's it. That's just kind of the end of the show.
What's the catchphrase? I don't listen to this podcast. What's the catchphrase?
Well, no, I mean, as you know, neither do I. I don't care for one of the hosts. I'm not going to say which one. I think it's something like we tend to say, nerds out.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.